Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Yeah, welcome along to the football show. It's Johnny Ward with Daniel McDonald in for the next hour. We're going to have Alan Murphy live on Skype from Galway, his adopted home, the Mayo Man, ahead of Galway United and the First Division's commencement for 2020 tomorrow. And Dan and I will just basically, I suppose, talk about life and what's going on in the Europa League.
I'm impressed you managed to get the Galway United manager. The show.
You missed
who's coming up after 9:30? Your parents.
Hello, mammy. Hello, daddy. I can't help but look. I'm on livescore.com here, and they have, you know, the usual array of
scores. Generally,
scores and
type of business they would trade in,
and ads for betting websites and so forth. But there's like a very, very prominent ad for Victoria's Secret.
Right.
And it's just a very scantily clad lady. It's just there in the corner, like
that's
that.
That's not an ad. That's more to do with your search history.
How are you getting on?
How it's generated. Or whoever uses it normally. I'm just saying. That's it'd be a different ad for different
users. Got a couple of comments in earlier on. Liverpool fans slagging me a bit about, I suppose I was questioning Gilesy on Liverpool season if they do get knocked out of the Champions League. Also got a text in from a Napoli fan, Nello, who says, talking about Napoli on the radio, we are not the team we were 2 years ago, but lately we have found some sort of solidity for us in Napoli. And Nello would, of course, be... like Julian Canny, married to sisters, but he's married to a Kerry lady. But there is a Napoli fan listening, which is
married
nice.
Married to sisters.
They're married to sisters.
Oh, like two of them. Oh, yeah.
Like you and Paul Corry's brother?
Yeah, okay. Sisters. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying with that.
How are you, Daniel?
It's not the unusual tangent, but anyway.
Yeah,
Gilesy, that's very convivial. It's more John Giles.
Yeah, that'd be a Richard Cooper gag as well. You missed him there doing an unbelievable Eddie Jones.
It was an unbelievable Joe Malloy.
Do you like his Joe Malloy?
Smooth. Yeah.
Smooth Joe.
I'd say Joe will take it very well.
Won a lot of awards. What do you make of his own Sheen impression?
The own Sheen one is, you know, his gold standard. I'd say it's probably changed Owen's life.
Mm.
I mean, he's far too young to have someone doing an impression of him, really.
Did you see him wearing the fake hair in with Shane Byrne?
I didn't see that one, I don't think. Yeah.
I spoke to Owen, actually, when the first impression came out, and he was kind of like... He was enjoying it, but there have been a few of them now, so it's very much set in. Thankfully, you and I have never been done and never will be.
Never will be.
Yeah. Hard enough to do us, actually. I mean, we don't even do a good job.
No. Well, a parody of ourselves, it could be said, on occasion.
Wolverhampton Wanderers 1, Espanyol 0. That is the halftime score. Rangers Braga has started the second half, and the game we're watching here is Olympiacos and Arsenal, which is 0-0 as well. So not many goals. Not many goals in the League of Ireland last week as well. We're going to get to that later on in the show. I suppose to talk about the Champions League, Dan. The big story, I suppose, in Europe was just Haaland and how utterly ridiculous this teenager looks.
And where, sorry?
Haaland.
Oh, Haaland.
Well, what speed did he clock the other night on the counter-attack? And I saw him play first, actually, in the Champions League when Liverpool were playing Red Bull. And he came off the bench and scored. And, I mean, you could tell he was promising, but he seems to, in that time that he's a few months old or whatever, he's gone to Dortmund, he just seems to be absolutely sensational.
Oh, he's outrageously good. I mean, it's still, for people of a certain generation, maybe just our one and older, you must remember his dad. And
his dad was no good either. Like,
he was all right.
Very average.
He got to the Premier League.
They do look very alike, but otherwise...
There's father and son, so there's not much of a shock.
Definitely father and son. They don't really resemble each other on the pitch.
Well, no, but I mean, there's obviously some talent in the genes. I mean, Haaland was still able to play Premier League level as a midfielder, which is still pretty high enough standard.
Wasn't able to play after Roy Keane got to him.
Well, I think it was subsequent injuries caused him a few problems as well. But yeah, it was all part of the equation. But yeah, he's sensationally good. I mean, he's probably taken a sensible step in his career rather than necessarily jumping too far too soon. Must be pretty exciting for even Norway just to have something like that.
We have Troy Parrott, but he can't get a look in at Spurs.
Well, I mean, it's a weird thing. It does put pressure on any other teenager as such, that when you see someone, you know, of that sort of generation, of that era, suddenly taking flight, you maybe become impatient about other players when you really shouldn't. You know, people just develop at different times and different ages. And I mean, he's got everything in terms of his size. He's got speed, power. Different types of goals that he scores. Generally, you're looking at, say, someone having one of, you know, someone's unbelievably quick, but maybe lacking the touch, or the other way around, you know, very skillful, but someone who's, who over time, their lack of mobility or something will catch up with them. It doesn't necessarily seem to be in those, in that category. And it, like, he didn't, as I said, like, you know, he took a sensible step going to Dortmund and sort of continuing his evolution rather than maybe going, like, okay, I mean, Kylian Mbappe's won a World Cup, so, like, I think his life choices have gone okay for him. But I guess he's gone on to the PSG mad money, and now people are talking about him. Oh, he's a bit spoiled, he's been a bit disappointing. Whereas Haaland is more so climbing his way there, but, I mean, he'll have his pick of wherever he wants to go now.
Where do you think he'll end up?
But it's almost depressing that you talk about someone at Dortmund, which is a massive club, and the language is, well, where is he going to go next? Like, really, I mean, he's only just gone there. Now, you know, the market will dictate that things will move pretty quickly, I guess. But in many ways, you'd be thinking, you know, this season, next season, another 18 months, maybe then think about it, but rather than rushing him out the door. But then again, they might just receive sort of this unbelievable offer, and there'll always be people around them telling them, well, what if you get injured, you know? Well, what if something happens to you? You have to take this opportunity now while it's there.
What do you make of Liverpool Atletico?
Yeah, I mean, like, I thought Atletico did what they had to do. I mean, the early goal obviously changed the dynamic of it, but, like,
it was very enjoyable to see a team. They're quite limited. They've Morata up front. You could tell they're a limited team, but they somehow beat Liverpool, which nobody has been able to do really this season.
In a couple of weeks' time, Costa will be a couple of weeks, you know, fresher, fitter. And I never thought it was going to be a foregone conclusion of a tie. I saw that there was a danger of there being some kind of twist in it. While ultimately believing Liverpool would go through, you know, Atletico over two legs, you know, strong home record, home first. You know, it's not really a surprise that it's going to be alive going to Anfield. You just about fancy them to go through, but I mean, they are in a situation now where there are, you know, an away goal concession away from being in real bother. Now, I mean, they've scaled bigger mountains than this, so that's why you would assume this Liverpool group will do it. And Atletico can't cede possession for the entire 90 minutes away from home like they were able to at home when they had the crowd and they could play the crowd a bit. I think it's been overdone
to that stadium?
No, I haven't. I wasn't in the old one either, to be honest. Yeah, I haven't actually done a lot of football in Spain, and particularly in Madrid. I went to the Bernabeu for like a stadium tour, but I've never actually done a game there. The stadium's great. Like, it's a real European Cup orientated stadium. So, like, it has a section for each, you know, for European Cup win, and not so much in the domestic leagues, whereas Barcelona is a bit more rounded, whereas you do actually get this perception of why Real are like, we are the European Cup club. Yeah. But, no, never been to Atletico at all.
It was really endearing that Simeone was just getting the crowd going. I remember when Oxlade-Chamberlain made a tackle in the second half after, I think, one of the substitutes went on this marauding run, and it relieved the pressure. And, you know, it was one of these moments that normally fans just wouldn't even notice anymore, but he started giving it all this to the crowd and they were loving it. Like, there was just clearly a really good atmosphere, and it did help them. Now, it helped them that they sort of fluked a goal after 2 minutes as well.
Well, like, it probably was not endearing to Liverpool fans watching it, but I think, you know, if the other way around and Klopp is engaging with the fans to some degree, you know,
absolutely,
people would enjoy it and, like, you know, warm to it. I mean, Simeone, like, he's not exactly the plucky underdog. Like, he's quite well paid. They still have managed to make some pretty big signings. I mean, João Felix wasn't able to play. But this is the thing. I mean, Liverpool probably caught them at a good time as well.
They haven't been in great form.
No.
And they've been terrible goal scoring.
But this, there is a slight feeling. Like, I just think that this could go all the way, this tie. You know,
I'd fancy Atletico to get a goal, to be honest, because I think they will.
Do you think Liverpool will score three then?
I'm not sure.
So, like, you're sort of thinking they're going to go out.
I think it'll be very close, but I could definitely see Atletico creating chances, and I think they can probably play better. I mean, Atletico, like, they were very limited going forward for much of the game. I mean, Morata's chance, you've got to be putting that away.
I suppose the slight thing for Liverpool is that they've been on this run of momentum in the league that's carried them. But this is like, you take a team out of that into a different competition where you're not playing for points. And, you know, the league's been won for some time. And in fairness, they've kept going and they've kept going. And, you know, but I'm sure, like, that intensity that carried them through the early part of the season, it's very hard to maintain it all the way through. So I think it's going to be a job to sort of build them back up and just to get them going again for this tie, because from being in the situation where actually the pressure's been off them going into games recently, because other than like maintaining their brilliant record, the job is done. So this is a different type of pressure. Now, I mean, they've handled the pressure before, so it's not as if there's a sort of fragility there, but it's maybe just a slight change of pace and a slight type, it's different type of challenge for them compared to what they've had. So there was just the odd moment the other day. I mean, the moments after half time, Atletico had chances to really score. They actually overplayed it, and like Liverpool was just a bit lax. You know, the fullbacks weren't as good as they normally are. And
I thought Salah was very disappointed again. I thought his touch for the chance when the ball was badly cleared and he just totally overtouched and it went to Firmino, and Firmino was offside.
And Mane was taken out of the game as well.
What do you make of that? I thought that was a gamble on Klopp. Now, if they don't get through, that could be seen as a pivotal moment, because ultimately Mane and Origi, there's not much comparison there, and they took off their most dangerous striker.
They clearly felt that he was being targeted to the extent that something bad could happen, you know, and then you risk some kind of suspension or risk something that problematic. And maybe that in itself hints at the confidence that Klopp had that he could afford to take away this very important player and they'll be fine. But it didn't necessarily work in the sense they didn't score. So it's just left them in a more nervous position than they would want to be in. And I just think, you know, Atletico with a couple of weeks down the line, I don't think the break is going to do them any harm, because this will be their focus. I mean, they're 14 points off the pace. Like, this is everything for them, really.
They played accordingly there. 13 points off the league in La Liga, with Real just 1 point ahead of Barcelona. Wolves have gone 2-0 up against Espanyol. 54 minutes gone there, and that looks fairly comfortable for Wolves. Neves with the goal on 52 minutes. Rangers still 1-0 down, and Arsenal still 0-0 at Olympiacos. I tell you, the second leg is going to be an absolute belter at Anfield, though. You know, it's just so finely poised.
Yeah, which if I offered you a ticket for that, or a ticket for Leipzig Spurs second leg, which would you go for?
Anfield, yeah.
You go for Anfield just because of the majesty of it. But will there be more? See, there probably will be, like, you know, Liverpool will have to be attacking. It will be thrilling. But like that Leipzig Spurs game, I actually think has the potential to be a very entertaining second leg. And actually PSG Dortmund. You know, because... well, Spurs will probably just have to go on the chase away from home, which, I mean, in the past they've done it.
The Red Bull Arena in Leipzig.
Yeah,
wouldn't 42,000 capacity.
I can't say I've been there.
Where is Leipzig? Saxony.
Right.
The German.
East.
I don't know, to be honest. I do know the German. The atmosphere of these German games is absolutely class. Like, and
it's more convivial as well.
You haven't done your travel has probably been restricted to Ireland games and maybe League of Ireland games so much around European football.
I've done a fair bit. Yeah,
highlights. Favorite stadiums you visited?
Warsaw. Well, actually, the Pauk Stadium, where they played Pauk Thessalonica played Shamrock Rovers in 2011. In terms of atmosphere, that was awesome. You know, a couple of the stadiums in Russia as well. I'm more atmospheres than stadiums.
Big time.
If you get me, you know, it's a bit like, I'm not necessarily into kits and stuff. It's more the occasion and what you remember. Like Belgrade, a couple of times in Belgrade when Shamrock Rovers were there, being at one of Montenegro's first internationals, which was actually a really tight 10,000-seater stadium. But like they only played their first match 4 days before. And I think it was Montenegro that they had to turn the Wi-Fi off until kickoff, because all the locals were just coming down to like download movies and stuff off the Wi-Fi in the stadium. So they had to manage it. Either that was there, Armenia, but I'm pretty sure it was Montenegro. But like, with Ireland, have been all sorts of weird places, like not weird, just sort of more off the beaten track places you'd never visit, like Kazakhstan in Astana, which was like the artificial pitch where Ireland nicked 2 goals. But like atmospheres, like definitely Warsaw, Pauk, Belgrade, they'd definitely be the ones that would spring to mind. But in terms of Germany, it's been more socially that I've been there. Well, actually, Ireland have played there a couple of times.
They have,
you know, Gelsenkirchen with John O'Shea. And there was a game in, the Noel King game. I think that might have been in Cologne, where Damien Delaney was captain. I must ask Damien about that at some
Saturday.
Stage. Yeah.
A few
stories and yarns out of him. But like he was the, I'm pretty sure he was the captain in what was a quite abridged Irish career that he had.
It was. And you're going to Bronwell. Tomorrow night, is it?
Well, yeah. A great arena in its own.
I love the Brandywell.
Its own sense. I think I'm probably heading to the Brandywell
tomorrow.
They have
the Subutio bar now.
You're not going to a game tomorrow, though. Good League of Ireland man yourself. You're taking a few shillings up in Dundalk to be on the telly.
Another good League of Ireland man will be joining us after the break. Alan Murphy.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Yeah, just got a text in there from Phil, which kind of makes me realise that I've wasted my life. Just during the ad break there, it was 2020.20 on the 20th of the 2nd, 2020.
Mm.
Yeah, we missed that, Dan. One thing we're not going to get, it back.
No, is it, you blink and you miss it.
Mm.
Well, how was it for you that minute?
We had an ad break. Phil also pointed out that Neves scored an absolute screamer for a very likeable Wolves side.
I saw Stephen Hunt tweeting something about it's official that he hates the Premier League ball, so clearly it's a different ball for Europa League action, and that's more suited to his skills.
One man who's hoping for a good 2020 is Alan Murphy, the Galway United manager. Alan, how are you?
Are you good, Johnny? How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'll be an awful lot happier once the League of Ireland First Division starts, which it belatedly does this weekend. It's been a long off season for everyone.
Yeah, it has. It's been a really long one. Being honest with you, it's been probably longer than everyone. We've been longer than everyone else because of, well, look, I suppose poor showing last season. But I mean, probably because we were trying to get a head start this season, really. So it ended up was starting 2 or 3 months before the season finished last year in terms of the plan for this year. Like, so I mean, it is where it is now, and hopefully we're not going to be at the end of 8 hours rain tomorrow and another call off, hopefully. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about that. Is that the tactics room in your actual home house, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's tactics. It's definitely not. No, it's far from it. It's a sitting room where there's a lot of tactics go on here as well, but it's more 3 and 4 year old tactics.
Dan, what have you made of the Shamrock Rovers?
I thought you were going to ask me what I make of his house.
Yeah, Dan doing up his own house, of course, lady. What do you make the whole Shamrock Rovers B team for all? And obviously today we only finally had some sort of clarity on it and closure, maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been a bit bizarre, the whole thing, really, for me. I mean, I guess in a weird way, it's raised awareness of the First Division in a manner that, you know, First Division clubs haven't been able to do so recently. I don't know what lesson or what you'd actually draw from that. Mm. You know, if the collective forces were sort of pooling together to concentrate on other things, what could they achieve? I didn't have a problem with it, really. I understand the objections to it. I think the objections probably, some of them, but not all of them, you know, were related to the process and how it happened. And it definitely doesn't seem like that was handled well. It could have been handled better in a way that was explained to clubs, perhaps better. But at the same time, I think, which would I prefer tomorrow starting off that season? Would I prefer a 9-team First Division or a 10-team First Division with the Limerick that you had last year? Or option C is with the Shamrock Rovers 2 team, who will, you know, the players that are there will, you know, train in a good environment every day. They'll play in a good stadium, probably get paid in pre-season, or certainly, you know, they'll have, if there's a week off, I don't think people will be skimping, trying to save a few quid by not looking after them. You know, like to get injured, they'll be looked after, you know. So I don't necessarily, and they're not a team that can get promoted. They can't get in the way. Now, I know there's an issue over them taking players from other clubs, and that's a difficulty for clubs, but that's what it's about, really, a lot of the objections and some of the other broader objections to it about damaging the First Division. I think there's far more damaging things in the First Division than the presence of this team who can't get promoted. So, you know, give me a choice of a 9-team, a 10-team with the Limerick that we had, or a 10-team with Shamrock Rovers 2, I'll go for Shamrock Rovers 2 all the time.
I couldn't agree more. Alan, obviously a scatter of very promising young managers in both the Premier and First Division. In the Premier Division, Stephen O'Donnell, Neil Fenn, I suppose Alan Reynolds, a little bit older, Ian Morris, his first job. In the First Division, Tim Clancy, not long into the game. Obviously, Dara Doyle and yourself and Gary Cronin. But do you have the most attractive job in the First Division at the moment, playing in a lovely stadium and obviously being backed by the Comers to give it a good go this year?
Do I have the most attractive? It's hard to know. I mean, time will tell. But I mean, in terms of the Comer back, and I mean, it's a big one for us. We you know what happened last year, obviously, in terms of the whole stability of the club being to the forefront and changing our philosophy of not trying to just do the quick fix on it and go back into the Premier with we'll say a bunch of players that have no real affiliation to Galway. So we look at it this season and we look at it and we go, we have 29 players signed, big squad, but I think looking at the other squads, they're big as well. But out of the 29, you have 21 of those players that are actually from Galway or from the county beside Galway. Like, so I mean, that says enough in terms of the philosophy that we're looking for. Yes, we've brought our few players in from here and there in terms of to bolster and to strengthen it, but we're staying true to ourselves. Like, I mean, it's not a huge change in terms of we'll throw money at it. Like, we're somewhat in the middle now of probably of point A and point B in terms of where we were previously. So I mean, look, there's a lot of good work happening at the moment. But we just want to start. I mean, we need to start the league. You know,
explain to people who the Comer Brothers are, John.
Yes, the Comer Brothers would be somewhere recently there was. Lists of Irish billionaires, and Brian and Luke Comer, who are essentially brothers from Glenamaddy, who came from scratch, and they snuck in at 17 on the list. Alan Murphy didn't make it on this occasion, but they snuck in at 17. They're developers who did very, very well during the recession. They obviously, during the recession, if you had money, you could spend it and you could buy, you know, property at a slashed price. And the Comers invested well, and now they put money into Galway United. And Alan, you know, as somebody who's obviously been involved for a long time, I'm just very excited, not only about this season, but the fact that they're investing in an academy and investing in facilities in Mountain South, which had originally been earmarked for the Galway GA. Could you explain what might happen there as well?
Look, I mean, this is going to be a slow burner. I mean, we're not silly enough to try and just jump in and do everything as quick as we can. I mean, we needed last year. We needed to really stabilise the club because we have some excellent underage development going on in terms of from 13s to 19s, where the academy with Johnny Glynn and I mean, so what we're looking to do is again to push on this year in terms of our development and in terms of the senior team and to make sure that I suppose Mountain South is a slow burner. We need to properly plan that, and there's a lot of planning going into it at the moment in terms of where we're going to do. I mean, we just don't want to have a situation where we just have a pitch out there and it's being used kind of like without any facilities with it. Mm. So we need to develop it properly. And that could take time. The Comer Brothers, you're definitely right, have come on board and have given us this and will help us in the long term to develop and all that. But it's for the moment, we're working off a bigger budget than last year, which wouldn't be hard, obviously, because what we did last year. So, I mean, we're in the mix in terms of being competitive now, and that's what we needed to be. I mean, it's kind of putting the cart before the horse, or the opposite way around. If you start doing a facility and not have a senior team, you know, it's which one do you do first? So we're trying to plan everything and make sure that I suppose that it doesn't happen again what happened previously, and we put money into a thing that's very much unplanned. And I mean, we look at this season, like we had the bulk of our squad were signed before Christmas nearly, and then in the few that came in during January. I mean, that would never have been the case previously. It would have been January, it would have been market time, and we'll try and go after players then, you know.
I'm just intrigued as well by what is the relationship with Galway United and other clubs in the city. Galway has an awful lot going on. It obviously has Pearce Stadium, a very good hurling team, a football team that has won an All-Ireland not that long ago, could be challenging this year. It has Connacht Rugby, it has the biggest race meeting effectively in the whole country, it has the arts, it has basically everything that you'd want going on. Soccer hasn't really achieved, but are football people behind Galway United? You know, we've always had problems between Galway United having issues with other clubs for some reason in the city, which is baffling considering everyone should be seemingly out for Galway United. What's the relationship like with Galway and other clubs now? You've obviously had to train somewhere else because you don't have your own training facilities. Are the other local clubs back in Galway United this year?
Yeah, well, look, it's always a slow burner in terms of making relationships and building relationships. And I think since I've come in, I think it's I think I've successfully done that in terms of working with clubs. And I mean, we now train in Salthill Devon, and they're very good to us. And we're up there 4 or 5 times a week nearly, and it's very good. And I mean, look at, you talk about the other we said the Connacht Rugbys and the Galway GAAs and that. I mean, I would have a background in a lot of that stuff. Where I mean, well, recently I had Ambrose Conboy of Connacht Rugby and of Irish Rugby in with us, and to do a full evening of development in terms of leadership and that. And I mean, I'm not afraid to extend that out into any of the other codes. There's no issue with that. I mean, you see it in Dublin. I mean, it's not just a Galway thing. Probably that the smaller clubs or the non-League of Ireland clubs they want their players as well, and it's a mix between wanting to develop them and obviously wanting to keep them, and then wanting also to send them on to do better things in terms of League of Ireland or across channel. So look, at sometimes it needs a lot of care and kind of small steps rather than just kind of, I suppose, jumping in and taking a lot of players out of a club. You may have to leave one or two at a time to take the following year just to keep relationships good, like, you know.
Dan, in fairness to Galway United, at least you do give out about the facilities in the League of Ireland. Terryland doesn't really fall into that bracket.
No, it doesn't. But I mean, of course, you know, that is tied in with the Galway FA and, you know, relations. Like, I think for people who maybe tune into this who aren't fully aware, I mean, it's not that long ago since Galway bizarrely had 3 clubs in the League of Ireland First Division between Galway. Was it Galway FC at the time before it became That's Galway right. United again, Merivale and Salthill Devon. And it is tied in with the, as Alan says, like, it is a situation that exists around the country where you have clubs who compete and then, you know, who wanted to compete. And in the case of Merivale and Salthill, they did, you know, in the National Underage Leagues, because they've done great work and, you know, producing players. I mean, Aaron Connolly, for example, you know, Aaron Connolly's an ambassador for Merivale United. Obviously, in the Merivale Galway relationship, probably hasn't been great Galway United relationship. So, yeah, it's great to have a great facility, and it's daft that you would have people in, you know, who are passionate about the same sport pulling in different directions within the same city. But it's happened for a reason. It's happened for historical reasons and mistakes, and people, you know, have to accept that they've happened. And hopefully, in time, you know, people are all pulling back together. And as Alan said, it's a slow process. It's not just going to be someone coming in and clicking their fingers overnight and suddenly everyone's great mates. But in many respects, like, it's a snapshot of the broader picture.
Yeah, it's no more than talk to Niall Quinn about the FAI. I mean, you look at it and go, look, the mistakes were made. And I mean, you can do one or two things. You can go and you can dwell on all the mistakes and start talking about them and name calling and all that. Or you can actually go and fix it and try and, repair the damage that was done and set new standards. And I mean, that's what has to be done. And I mean, I think especially within Galway, I think we're well on the way to making those relationships good. And I think everyone really being on the same page, hopefully in the next while, in terms of where we want to go and who we want to bring with us. And I mean, it'll only take time, you know.
I've seen a couple of the Galway United pre-season games. You must be very excited. You've such a huge squad as well, Alan. I mean, you've a lot of depth. Just many reasons to be very hopeful, I would say, this season for Galway United supporters.
Look, yeah, I mean, there is a big squad, but I mean, I've learned from my own experience and from my management experience that, like, you need a squad. Like, I mean, you look at Shell's squad last year, and if you need to be competitive and you want to push on, you're going to have that element of competition within the squad. And it's usually important also that the players, I suppose, and I'm able to manage that, and that it's difficult. Like, I understand it's difficult that players might not be playing and will wait.
You've got to 30 in your squad, have you?
29, he said, John.
29. I mean, that was probably one of your players texting there saying, I better be playing tomorrow, I might. You know, I mean, how are you going to keep the other 18 or 19 happy?
Well, look, at any stage in time, there's injuries and there's key injuries. And that's the role of a manager. I mean, I'm not trying to make it easy for myself by signing 16 and then 2 or 3 weeks down the road, I'm struggling for anyone to play up top for me. I mean, I'm a big boy now in terms of being able to speak to people and to manage people. And I mean, that's what I've done throughout my career and in the jobs I've had and all that. And that's what you do. I mean, if you're honest with people and really, and really you're not working behind them. And as I said, the squad we have at the moment is a really honest bunch of players that are all in the same pulling in the same direction. So that's what we need.
The president's going tomorrow, I believe. He's due to attend.
That's the plan. Yeah.
Has he ever had any supportive words, or actually like words to put like severe pressure on you at any stage and saying like, this has to be the year, Alan? Or
he gives the team talk half the time. He's like Berlusconi. He just comes in and say, listen, you're not playing, you're playing. Is that the way it goes, Murph?
That's I'm surprised you haven't mentioned that before. Yeah. No, look, but he's a top man in terms of, I've been very friendly with him for years, and he was top table at my wedding, so I don't think he's going to be putting pressure on me. But he's top table at your wedding. He was indeed, yeah. Wow. So I mean, he's a gent. So for a long time, we've been friends. So
did he give a speech?
Did he give a speech?
Yeah.
No, he didn't. I think around
the president of Ireland at your wedding, and you said, "Nah, Michael, you say nothing, whatever you do."
Just get one of the lads to slaughter him here. Like, you know, he could have done it in a more dignified manner.
It must have been a big wedding, Murph.
Keep it low-key, yeah.
Finally, what players should we be looking out for? You've obviously, Conor Barry was good last season. Mikey Place, big signing. Duggan, what are the reasons for Galway people to get out and support this team?
I suppose, look, I'm not being disrespectful to Galway people, because I mean, Galway people need a competitive team to support. I mean, that has always been the case. And I suppose that's the plan this year, that we'll be competitive and that we'll be at the right end. So that's the first box ticked, I'd hope. Secondly, is that we've a large group of players that are from that are very identifiable. Like, so I mean, that's usually important for Galway people as well. And look, could you ask for people to, you ask who's going to be, I suppose, the ones to watch? I mean, we've a lot of ones to watch. We've a lot of guys that came in last season and did very well, and we re-signed. So that was the likes of the Cillian Bruder and Christine Christopher and Jack Lynch, three came in the window type. But then we've little ones as well that might be slow burners, like Donald Higgins, who played 17 games in his first season last year as a 19s international. You have Jack O'Connor, who I've taken from Sligo, a Mayo lad that I've known for years, and I mean he'll be 19 still, but he could make an impact. And then we have obviously the one or two like the Shane Duggins and Josh Smith and that we would have added, and Dino Halloran that would have experience in the Premier. So I mean, I think we've a good little mix, but I wouldn't be kind of sticking anyone out there in terms of that he'll be a key player. But look, I'm sure someone will jump out that probably I haven't mentioned there.
No. Thanks very much for your time, Alan, and best of luck this season.
Guys, thanks a million for having me.
Cheers. Cheers.
Lacazette has just scored for Arsenal, a very good counter-attacking goal, Olympiacos. 9 minutes left, Wolves 3-0 up against Espanyol, and 2-2 in the Rangers game, Dan.
You should know never to ask a manager to, like, you know, what ones to watch, because they'll name every player. Mm. You know, they're like, you talk earlier about like diplomatic managers and going very GAA-esque. Like, I mean, at the end of the times, you'd ask a manager, well, you particularly like that type of question, give us some players.
He did, though.
He named half the squad.
Nah, he named five players. But he
named them. I wanted to go back to Michael D being at the top table at the wedding.
Yeah.
You're coming in with a Galway United question, which are just for your Galway United needs. People are like, we need to know more about the top table at that wedding.
You'd ask the Galway United manager about Galway United players.
It's just like, I think the premise was...
Who was at your wedding?
Well, I tell you were, but you weren't at the top table. But the premise was, you know, what's the reason for the people at Galway to come out and support the team? That's, you're using this as a personal vehicle to, like, propagate the Galway message, I think.
We'll be back after the break.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Incredible comeback by Rangers, 2-0 down at home to Braga, and are now 3-2 up going into the last 8 minutes or so of the game. Bit of reaction to the interview with Alan Murphy. The Comers started out as plasterers. Boring trivia, but it does give me an excuse for this. What do a plasterer and a goalkeeper have in common? They both hate corners. Liam. Well, the Comer brothers didn't hate them sufficiently to stop doing what they did. They worked very hard. And
they didn't cut corners.
Well... Dan won't be happy. Johnny got to do an entire 15 minutes on Galway United. McDonald will be demanding at least 10 minutes coverage for RD's finest, Square United AFC.
Could be arranged.
Paul O'Brien, who's researching a book on Galway United, has texted in to say, Michael D. Higgins' favourite ever player is Alan Murphy. His favourite current player is Donald Higgins, who's a very promising player. I know Tom Moen likes. So what would you expect Michael D. Higgins has in the Oris? Like, he could have... I know, Michael Collins, Jim Larkin, if you want to go down the left-wing route. You know, these guys adorning the walls. Not that.
Johnny Glynn.
A framed jersey of Alan Murphy in the Oris.
Does he have a picture of Johnny Glynn winning the cup in 91?
We can only speculate. The legendary Johnny
he
Glynn.
He might have in like one of the extra bathrooms or something.
How many bathrooms do you reckon there are in the Oris?
I don't know, actually.
You can overdo it on the bathrooms as well. I mean,
it's presidential residence. I mean, the last thing you want is another president over and then it's occupied. I'd say four.
Four. I'd say over-unders on the Oris and Uthron toilets. I'd be well over four now. I'd be closer to eight or ten, yeah.
8 to 10, yeah. It's probably actually, you're probably wise, yeah.
It's like, my president, can I use the bathroom? Well, which one? I mean, there's one of...
You can go to Terryland, you can go to Eamon DC. You can have a League of Ireland team to them all.
53106, if you know how many toilets are in Oris and Uthron. You're off to the Randy Brandywell, as they call it, tomorrow night.
I am. That's going to be how many toilets there is there at the moment. More since it was renovated, actually.
What brings you to Derry on a Friday night? Derry versus Finn Harps.
Derry Finn Harps.
We'll be going to Talca for Shells.
Shells and Dock might be the place to go. That's a good array of games tomorrow. Waterford Bows should be decent, should be well attended. Then you have the First Division games, or the People's League, as it was called then. What do you think of the People's League? People didn't see this, obviously, because the First Division clubs, well, some people did see it, but only fans of First Division clubs.
In a desperate kind of attempt to make us normal.
Yeah. They put out a statement to say they're playing under protest against Shamrock Rovers 2, but it's the People's League hashtag with a poster with, the font wasn't great.
We're all getting very left-wing in Ireland all of a sudden.
But I mean...
Swing towards the Shinners, now it's the People's League.
I mean, it's very possible that Shamrock Rovers 2 will have bigger home attendances than three or four or five teams in the People's League.
Because season
they are probably going to be better supported... Dan,
well, at Lone,
have
nobody at the games.
In the division.
At
Lone, UCD wouldn't have big crowds. Wexford wouldn't have big crowds. Cove can drop low. I mean, if you're going to be the People's League, you need people.
That's I can't disagree there.
Now, like the First Division clubs are embattled, and like you know that's you know they need support and help. But I just think that they've picked a bizarre campaign to be mobilised by. Like, there's much bigger issues. Like, now it does seem that in response to this, the process for Shamrock Rovers 2, there's going to be like a 6-month review of the overall league, and I think that process should definitely be explored. But so should other things. You know, paying players in pre-season and proper facilities and not having issues with licensing and a lot of other things.
With all due respect, then, how does a First Division club pay players in pre-season?
Oh, well, I know. It's a challenge for them. It's a challenge and it's a short season, but it's not a great practice for players. I agree, but it's not a great practice for those players who have to slog through pre-season for no payment. They have to wait till the business starts. So I'm just saying that for players at those clubs, you know, are they in a better position to be elsewhere where they might be in a slightly better environment? You know, even if it's the second team of a Premier Division club.
Yeah.
That is if you're talking about player welfare and player, you know, the lot of the player, it's bizarre. And the other thing about the Shamrock Rovers 2 thing, which is interesting, I mean, I didn't really hear a huge amount of opposition from other managers or players within the division. In fact, I know that quite a few managers had no problem with it at all, whereas their clubs were jumping up and down about it. It's an interesting thing about, you know, the difference between the perspective of people running clubs and people actively participating.
I haven't gotten it from the start. The League of Ireland First Division was a basket case last season. Limerick were more or less thrown out of the league. They needed a club to come in. Shamrock Rovers was willing to come in with a second team that is not going to finish bottom, is not going to have the worst crowds, will play in the best stadium, will be well run, and will do things honourably, and they're given out.
Yeah, there's bigger problems that the First Division needs to address than that.
The Premier Division obviously started last week. Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers both won. I do like the set of fixtures tomorrow night, and you're going up to the Brandywell. Derry are in an interesting place at the moment because, like the Comers at Galway United, plenty of money has gone in from Philip O'Doherty, their main backer. And the way that they're talking, they're almost half talking of even challenging this year. Well, at the very least, they should be pushing for third.
Well, that's the version of challenging now. No other team than the Dundalk Shamrock Rovers will fill first or second. No chance in this world that will happen. So the best version of challenging is to be third and to cement European football. And they have some... There's some really good players, Derry, and it's reflective. Like, I have a piece in the paper tomorrow, actually, just about the sort of the foreign invasion as such into the league and how it happens and how, you know, clubs have to be a lot more creative now, particularly a club like Derry. And I spoke to Paddy McCord for the piece, because Derry have actually lost a lot of their better players to Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers. I mean, Patrick McElhenney, Michael Duffy, Aaron McAniff, you know, three of the best players in the league are from Derry. And there's others, Georgie Kelly, who grew up around Derry, you know, Donegal.
Dean Jarvis.
And others who are Daniel Lafferty, another one, Shamrock Rovers, who are playing elsewhere because Derry can't compete with the money and, you know, what's basically the money that's on offer at Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers.
And so, also the fact that clubs are challenging for the players in Derry.
Yeah, so they've had to, and I mean, there's been issues with Stirling as well, and that's actually affected Derry and VAT, and they've other complications about sort of their jurisdiction that have snookered them a small bit. But as a result, they have to, A, I suppose, look for the next best category of player in Ireland, or B, look to other jurisdictions and see what they can do. So they've brought in players on loan. They've brought in, like, Tim Nielsen, a Norwegian striker. You know, they've brought in a Belgian on loan from Hull in defence. They've a guy from the Ivory Coast in midfield. They've a couple of French speakers, like, in the team, living together. And it's
the
really
Ivory Coast lad will feel at home in the bog side anyway.
But like, it's an interesting, well, exactly, yeah, if the flags are facing the wrong way. But
do at least one or two in his honour.
Yeah, but but like that's what the other clubs have to do. And even like the other clubs in the league as well, like Waterford, St Pat's, Cork, you know, Cork had seven newcomers last week, that it's hard for them to compete with the best in Ireland. They're looking outside the box and trying to find different players. And I mean, Derry still have some good local players, some good local lads involved, like Kieran Harkin, Jack Malone, names that I think, you know, they're a club in recent years, from like James McLean through to others like Ronan Curtis, who, you know, came through there, and others. Like, they've a good, really good record of coaching and producing good players in the region, but they're merging that with talent from outside as well. And I always like going to Derry. It's a great place.
For such a small place, Derry, obviously it is a football town, but the production of players is
quite
incredible.
And the region as well. It's not just because you have a lot of lads that you would think of as Derry, but they're actually Donegal, like Stephen McLaughlin, who was there, who's over in England, and, you know, quite a few others in that general category. And look, we've even seen with the Irish international team now, between, you know, Shane Duffy, James McLean, okay, you had Darren Gibson, who dropped off the radar, but like the actual Derry contribution, I mean, you can throw Ronan Curtis into the mix now, although he grew up in Donegal as well, that actually that area and what it's contributed to the national football team would be a lot stronger than, say, you know, Limerick and sort of parts down south as such, you know, who probably haven't had the same success at all. I mean, Galway has finally almost got its act together in recent years in terms of talent, but that is a proper part of the country that has developed its own really good players and continues to do so.
Árasán Uachtaráin's website say rumours that it has 92 rooms are exaggerated. It has 92 number doors, so some rooms will have two or more doors. No official word on the amount of bathrooms, but over in the White House, Donald Trump has his pick of 35 bathrooms.
That doesn't surprise me.
It would suggest that he's a little...
He goes there to tweet.
He's like tweeting from the Jacks?
Yeah. Very possible. Be interrupted by advisors.
There'd be a kind of an appropriate symmetry of him tweeting whilst
talking
on the toilet.
Mm.
What do you make of Trump? Where is this world going?
I'm not sure we can solve it at 9:52.
We've about 3 minutes.
Yeah, he can't really sum it up. You wouldn't say Trump would turn up unannounced at a local match.
No.
Of some description.
I went to Galway United draw the United game. And we were going to make, I brought a cousin from America, actually, who may or may not have voted Trump. But we went to the game. I was like, we'll come in. They don't have bars at these grounds, but sure, we can bring in a few craft cans, and they look like, they're green, they look like 7-Up. So we get away, we'll have a couple of beers in the stand. Nobody will be any the wiser. Rock up with this, like, nondescript First Division game. Big man's come to the game all of a sudden. Michael D. So it's like all the security outside. They're checking bags. Like, you can't bring that in. You can't bring beer.
Cause
so,
chaos.
Our evening was ruined, and it was a terrible, like, nil-all draw or something like that.
I mean, he probably would have advocated you having a couple of cans.
Michael
as well.
D.
He would have had no issues with it, I'd say.
Ah, not at all. Of course, it is very much in the news of late, this too many pints being had at rugby games and not being able to watch the game. And of course, when football games are on in Lansdowne Road, nobody can have a pint while
you've voiced your opinions on this strongly before.
I think it's
there's a labelling of the football
sporting
fan.
Apartheid, really, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a version of it there. It is a case that, you know, these people can't be trusted to control themselves.
We can't get any confirmation that Harry Gregg ever played for Dundalk. Now, this, I saw this in the Guardian obituary. He played for a couple of northern clubs, but it also stated that he played for Dundalk, which I've spoken to a few.
That would have been in his youth, would it? Like before. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's ever come up on the list of, you know, great players to have played for Dundalk as such. You know, like, they would pop up regularly. So it wasn't in his latter years then.
Coming towards the end of the show, Rangers 3, Braga 2. Big night at Ibrox there. Big come-from-behind win for Steven Gerrard's men. Olympiacos 0, Arsenal 1. And you'd imagine Lacazette's goal in the 81st minute should be more than enough. Steve Doyle, his parting shot as he left the office today was, I really fancy Wolves to win by at least one goal. I think Espanyol will be taking it a bit easy. Well, they only won by four. 4-0, Jota with a hat-trick and Neves with an absolute screamer. They are a nice team.
They can have a real
good, like Wolves.
And they haven't suffered from, like, taking the Europa League somewhat seriously as well, which is sort of really reductive English attitude that exists. They're still going okay in the league, but they may as well just have a crack at this competition now. They're actually a good one-off side. Why not win it, get into the Champions League that way?
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in. And if you see Dan in the Brandywell tomorrow night, do say hello.
Well, no, I'll be busy, actually. Don't say hello.
It's absolutely typical of why we don't really get on. You know, if somebody comes up to me, I'm like, at least feign interest in myself.
No, I will.
You're
actually,
no,
will.
Actually, don't come over to me. Don't even say hello, I'm busy.
No, I will.
Unbelievable.
I'm over for anyone saying hello.
Anyway, our daily sports breakfast show is back tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. You can get it all on our social channels and listen to OTB Sports Radio via the Go Loud app. Adrian and Owen will have Gary Breen, Ronan O'Gara and Alan Quinlan on the show. Tomorrow night we'll play you some more highlights from our Virgin Media Rome show with Graeme Souness, Brian Kerr, Damien Delaney and Keith Andrews. We'll also have Friday Night Racing. Brian McMahon will be joining Ger and John Duggan. That's our lot for the night. Up next is a bit of a special one. Richie is in for Tom Dunn and he's doing a special tribute to the late Andrew Weatherall. Good night.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.